The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 883. It's the 27th of September 2017. On the podcast today, I have Dave Reeves, Managing Director of Keras Resources, KRS, and Dave talks about the $10 million placement at Calidas Resources and what he sees as now a valuation disconnect. Also on the podcast, Tim McCarthy, chairman of Immu Pharma, that's IMM, reflects on their interim results and gives an update on their lead drug, Lupizor, which is currently in its phase 3 pivotal trial. Also on the podcast, Philip Prince, chief financial officer of Defence Group, that's DFX, covers some of their highlights from their interim results and goes through the detail on their master services agreement with BB Tech. Also on the podcast, Michael Dickerson, CEO, and John Beale, CFO of MyPay, that's MPAY, and they go over their interim results and also talk about the outlook in the world of mobile payment solutions. Plus, as always, I have the top 5 most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top 5 most liked RNSs on the platform this morning.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dave Reeves, Managing Director of Keras Resources, that's KRS ticker. Dave, thanks for joining me.
Always a pleasure, Justin.
So you've got some news out, and we'll get to that in a bit. But for new investors, though, or people listening to the podcast, I've not heard of you before, Dave. Explain what Keras is all about, please.
Yeah, so Keras's main asset and current value driver is we're the largest shareholder in an ASX-listed company called Calidas Resources, which is focused on Australian gold, in particular the Pilbara region, which is a bit of a hotspot at the moment. Mm-hmm. But in addition to that, we also have exposure to battery metals through a couple of projects in Togo, Chasing Manganese and Cobalt.
Okay, well, the news is Calidas has completed a $10 million Aussie dollar placement. Take us through the detail here, please, Dave, you would.
Yeah, for sure. So Calidas listed in June, raised about $8 million and has been drilling away quite aggressively, getting some really good results. That's seen the share price go up almost 1.5 fold since listing. In fact, over 1.5 fold since listing. Calidas needs to do a lot more drilling next year to keep increasing that resource, keep adding value. So it needed to raise at some point, and because of the excitement in Pilbara Gold, Calidas decided to get that raising done now. They went out for $8 million and ended up almost 3 times oversubscribed and took $10 million. So that sees Calidas really well funded through next year for a lot of drilling. So that will add a lot of resources and ounces to those resources, I should say. It also, what that really means for Keras is that we've got a lot of performance shares outstanding on various deliverables, which include 500,000 ounces of indicated resource and a pre-fees. And it sees us well and truly funded to achieve certainly the first one and potentially even the second one. And that's just real value for Keras shareholders.
Yeah, and you were saying that there's a bit of a disconnect between the excitement and performance of Calidas and Keras. What do you think that is, Dave?
I'm not really sure. I think, you know, the market has to wake up at some point to that. Because if you have a look at it at our closing price today, we were, I think the implied value is going to be somewhere in the order of £22 million worth of shares. Mm-hmm. That Keras holds in Calidas, and our market cap is 8.
Yeah.
On award of performance shares, you know, that's a massive disconnect. And certainly at some point, the arbitrage individuals will see that. And that gap has to close rapidly at some point. And I think this raise, you know, shows that certainly people down here believe in the story. And, you know, with that in mind, we'll achieve all those performance targets as Keras. And those shares will come. And it's, you know, it's really underpinning the value of Keras heading forward.
Yeah, yeah, okay. So what's the next sort of bit of news we can expect out from Keras, Dave?
So Keras will certainly be announcing all of the Calidus news, and that's where the bulk of the news is going to come from. Lots more drill results coming, resource upgrades, etc. And I think that's probably the key value driver for Keras shareholders coming up, is the first resource upgrade. If we, you know, if Calidus can prove up over 500,000 ounces of indicated, it adds another just under 250 million shares in Calidus to Keras's direct holding, which, you know, is worth, I'm trying to do the sums on the top of my head, another 7 million quid to Keras shareholders. So I think that's a real value driver. Lots more drilling there next year, more consolidation, etc. So that's where the focus should be. In the meantime, we've got very low-key activities happening in Togo. You know, we are awaiting a mining permit there, have been for a long time. And I know that's frustrating, certainly for shareholders and myself, but, you know, we are generating huge value in Australian gold, and that's where I think the focus should be.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, Dave, well, you another score here. If someone's listening and they like the sound of this and the disconnect in value here and the potential, and they're not following you on Vox Markets, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please, Dave.
Yeah, well, as you just said, I mean, we're trading at a substantial discount to the implied value of our holdings in Calidus. Calidus have just raised a lot of money to ensure that, you know, certainly the first and hopefully the second performance targets are met. So that's a reality for those performance shares. And this allows the resource to grow, adding even more value with a huge amount of blue sky potential in that gold field. So to me, it's, you know, gold, gold, gold. Is where we want to head.
Marvellous, Dave. Good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Much appreciated, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Tim McCarthy, chairman of IMU Pharma. That's IMM ticker. Tim, thanks for joining me.
No problem, Justin. Good to speak to you again.
You've had a couple of significant results as of late. We'll get to those in a bit, the news. Before we do, Tim, for anyone listening, not sure as to what you do, give them a brief summary, please.
Yes, of course. Well, IMU Pharma is a drug development company. We're listed on AIM, have been for the last 11, 12 years. And what we're known for primarily is our very late stage program. It's a drug called Lupusor, which is in phase 3 clinical testing for an autoimmune disease called lupus. Lupus is in a sense, quite a rare disease. It's suffered by about 5 million people worldwide, primarily women. And we believe we have quite an innovative approach to this. There is a high unmet medical need on the market, not very many effective drugs without side effects on the market, unfortunately. And we're very excited because we're coming to the end of that phase 3 study now, with results expected in the first quarter of next year. So very exciting time for us.
Yeah, and you released interims out this morning, and prior to this, you updated on the progress of Lupusor, the trial over the last few days. Firstly, can you summarise where IMU Pharma is with the current status of this phase 3 pivotal trial, please, Tim?
Yes, of course. Well, just to remind your listeners, a phase 3 clinical study is the last stage of clinical testing in the whole gamut of clinical testing that all drugs have to go through. And we recruited 200 patients into this study. So half of them are on placebo and half on the active drug. And last week, we put an update. We put these updates out on a regular basis. We put an update out on the study, and that was to say that we have now had all 200 patients pass through the six-month stage. This is a 12-month study, I should say, for patients. They're in the study for 12 months. So all patients are through the 6 months. We have just over a quarter of patients have completed the 12 months altogether. And we are looking forward to publishing the top-line results of this study in the first quarter next year. Everything is on track. And most importantly, what we can see, and when I say we can see, it's because this study is what they call double-blinded. So we or the investigators or the patients don't know who's taking the drug and who isn't. But what we can see is that there is an absolutely robust safety profile on this drug, and that's very important.
Yeah, so explain why is that so important, please, Tim?
Well, in any drug development program, what you're looking for is a combination of efficacy, i.e. the drug works effectively in the patient, but also that has to be balanced with a safety profile or side effect profile, which is sometimes called. Most drugs that are approved for use, it's always a balance between that risk and benefit. In other words, the benefit to the patient of taking the drug to alleviate their symptoms of whatever disease or condition they're suffering from. But because you're putting mostly you're putting a chemical into your body of one sort or another, and that always doesn't sit well with the body. So very often there are side effects of one sort or another. So all drugs, when they are approved, the regulators will look at the balance between the benefit to the patient versus the side effect profile, which they have to put up with. Mm-hmm. So it's important, firstly, you have to get efficacy, because if the drug doesn't work, then it's a bit of a no-go anyway. But if you have a drug which works but has such serious side effects that it's of danger to patients, then the drug won't get approved either. So what we've seen consistently through our clinical studies all the way through is the drug is working, and it's working extremely well, but also we have a completely benign side effect profile. And I'll repeat that again. Completely benign. In other words, we don't see any side effects whatsoever. And that's quite unusual, but it's very much down to the way that the drug works. It's not a drug which is absorbed into the bloodstream. It's a, what we call a subcutaneous administration, a little bit like going into the doctors for a vaccine. Mm-hmm. So it's just popped into the top of the arm. And that stimulates the immune system in such a way that it stops the action which gives rise to this particular autoimmune disease, which is lupus. So with that profile of a very, very benign safety or side effect profile, we're very confident going forward that we should see a very good result when we announce results next quarter. Sorry, when I say next quarter, first quarter in 2018.
Yeah, yeah. And saying that, yesterday you provided the market with quite a bullish statement on initiating Lupizor's regulatory submissions. And the phrase, and I quote, "planning ahead in anticipation of the trial's successful outcome" was used. Can you sort of give details as to what activities you plan to accomplish over the next few months, please, Tim?
Yes, of course. Well, firstly, the bullish statement. We are looking forward with confidence because, one, again, to repeat myself, any successful trial, any successful drug is a balance of the efficacy and safety. The safety, we've had so many patients go through the study now. We've got more patients have gone on this drug for a longer period of time than we've had before, because previous trials have only been for 3 months' duration. So all 200 patients have now gone through for 6 months, and a lot of them actually have been through for 9 or even 12 months. So we're very confident of the safety profile, i.e. that benign profile. And certainly all the efficacy results we've had to date in previous clinical studies have supported the fact that Lupizor is very effective in patients. So putting all that together, we are looking forward with confidence to a successful outcome for the trial. And when one does that, then you have to plan ahead, you have to look forward. And in preparing what we put out the other day, we said we're preparing the regulatory dossiers, mm-hmm. for both the FDA and the EMEA. And what that involves is when you actually apply to the regulatory authorities for approval for a drug, you have to put a regulatory dossier together, which is quite extensive. And it not only includes all of the clinical trial results that you've had for this drug all the way through to phase 1, phase 2, phase 3, but it also includes all the preclinical data, all the dosing regimens, all the safety, but it also includes the manufacturing. So, for example, do we have an approved manufacturing methodology for producing the drug? Is the drug stable? In other words, you know, will it have a shelf life when it's launched? All of these things, it's a very, very involved package. And one has to plan ahead. So what specifically we said, as an example, in our earlier announcement this week on the manufacturing, was as part of the dossier, you have to include 3 separate batches of commercial material. In other words, that material which you're going to use to launch the drug. And that obviously takes time to manufacture, but more importantly, once it's manufactured, it has to go on stability testing. to demonstrate to the regulators and to everybody else that it is stable and have a shelf life. So if you start doing that in 6 months or 9 months' time, mm-hmm. you're losing all that time from when you could potentially put the dossier in. So it's about planning ahead. We're planning ahead and spending that time and money with confidence.
Yeah, well, I mean, talking about planning ahead, so what activities do you plan for the rest of this year, Tim?
Well, for the rest of this year, we will continue our proactive and transparent investor relations program. We will certainly keep our investors in the market in general updated on the progress of the study. Behind that, we are looking more and more into our earlier stage portfolio, and let's not forget that we do have other products in other areas that are at an early stage of clinical development, but we are putting more resources and more time into those as well as Lupusor and Lupus comes to the end of its clinical development program.
Excellent. And how confident, Tim, are you in announcing top-line results for Lupusor in the phase 3 trial in Q1 of next year?
Yeah, we're absolutely confident. We're working with our clinical research organisation, Simbeck Orion, and they're bang up to date with processes and data collection because we know exactly when the last patient is going to complete his or her 12 months. Mm-hmm. So we know that date. And what this is about is then processing data. In other words, the all the data that's collected from patients throughout the study has to be verified and put into the database and sorted and ensured that it's all good. But we're doing that as we go along. So we're not going to be faced at some point in the first quarter with data to process for 200 patients. We're doing this as we go along. So as soon as the last patient is completed, then we will only have a minimal amount of data sorting to complete, which makes us very confident, and so is Simbeck Orion very confident that we can produce the top-line results in the first quarter next year.
Yeah, and with sort of top-line results, you know, that close in Q1 next year, are you receiving sort of more interest from potential licensing partners?
Well, it's difficult to say more or less, but let me say that, this is a very unique drug. It's got the potential to be a very big commercial success. And that is attractive to lots of pharmaceutical companies. All major pharmaceutical companies are looking for new drugs for their portfolios. They're not producing as many in-house drugs through their own research and development they used to. So there's an awful lot of interest in Lupusor. Yes, there is.
Excellent. Well, Tim, there's one thing left to do. If someone's listening to this right now and they like the sound of what you're doing there, Dimmy Pharma, especially with Lupusor, but they're not yet following you on Vox Markets, can you give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button, please?
Well, we're in a very unique situation. We're a relatively small, by terms of market capitalization, drug development company here in the UK, listed on AIM. In my opinion, I'm sure you hear all chairmen and CEOs say this, in my opinion, that the market capitalization is not reflective of the potential of Lupusor. And Lupusor is literally months away from reading out top-line results in a very pivotal and important phase 3 study. We're going into a market where there is a high unmet medical need. We get constant feedback from physicians and patients that they are looking forward to the launch of this drug. And in terms of investment proposition, I think it's second to none.
Tim, good to chat to you. And like I said, you've got quite a bit of news out in the next few months. Hopefully we chat again in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
All right. Thank you, Justin. Good to speak to you again.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Philip Prince, Chief Financial Officer of Defence Group. That's DFX ticker. Philip, thanks for joining me again.
Good morning. Nice to speak to you.
Now, you've had a couple of announcements out, significant announcements of late, and we'll get to that in a bit. Before we do, Philip, people listening right now have never heard of Defence. How would you summarise the business to them?
So, Defence is a cybersecurity software developer focused on the rapidly growing mobile segment of the market, starting off in retail and now moving into the corporate, so to address the whole market, dealing with security concerns, particularly things like ransomware that everybody has now seen hitting the market.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, let's. You've had your unaudited interim results for the 6 months ended the 30th of June. And let's go through some of the highlights, if you could, please, Philip.
Sure. Well, this morning we announced results to 30 June with a revenue increase on the prior year, or the prior interim period, of 35%. And underpinning that was both volume growth and average revenue per user growth. So the underlying revenue growth was actually 45%. And on top of that, we had the benefit of Memopal, an acquisition we made in the second half of last year.
Is this going the way you wanted it to go at the moment, Philip?
Yes, so revenue is increasing at a decent lick, which is what we're forecasting and expecting. Mm-hmm. Costs are also under control. What people will know from last year and again this year is that it's a game of two halves. The first half is where the costs are incurred, and the second half is where the revenue. So there's a lot more revenue to come in the second half, and the costs essentially go down. So the loss in the first half is more than covered by the profit in the second half. And that's what investors saw last year, and is going to be the same again this year.
Excellent. Okay. And also announced today, the BV Tech Master Services Agreement. Can you explain this agreement and how it's progressing, please, Philip?
Yes. So back in April, we announced the start of a long-term strategic partnership with BV Tech. Mm-hmm. BV Tech are an Italian systems integrator, IT systems integrator, who have been specifically focusing on cybersecurity over the last few years, because they, too, have realized this is the direction of the market and what people are prepared to invest in. Mm-hmm. So in April, we bought some software from them. They invested in us and became our largest shareholder. During the summer, we then announced that we had entered a software distribution contract with them, i.e. we could sell our software to them. And then this morning's announcement finishes off that set of documentation so that we can, within the AIM rules, buy from them software development services. They have almost 600 people who are expert in software development and in serving the corporate market. So we have the foundations in place to leverage their market access to gain entry to the corporate market, complementing our retail market. So that's why we're excited about that agreement.
Yes, and overall, I mean, the market is a hot sector, isn't it? And do you feel you are at the fence, you know, cutting out a nice little sort of chunk of that pie there?
Yes, the market, this overall cyber market is absolutely huge. So all of the drivers to that market are going the right direction. So we, Little Defence, is looking for the right segments of that market to maximize our growth, to maximize our opportunities. And the view we've taken over the last 6 months of been explaining to the market is that by entering the corporate market with solutions for things like the EU General Data Protection Regulation, which is coming soon, is the best way of gaining traction and getting access to some of those larger corporate customers to underpin some medium-term growth.
Yes, and early signs of that, is that the right decision?
Yes, we're sure it's the right decision. Mm. The retail is working, corporate is in a way a bigger market, and therefore it'd be remiss not to be attacking that in the right and controlled fashion.
Excellent work. Okay, well, Philip, if anyone's listening to this right now and they're not following you on Vox Markets, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please.
Well, the first, as I've just said, it's a great market to be in. Mm-hmm. I'd suggest everybody should be tracking what's going on the cyber market. It's here to stay, unfortunately, and protection is what people need. Number two, we have now got a lot of the foundations to add to our ability to hit the corporate market, which means that we're confident that over the medium term we can deliver sustained revenue growth.
Do you know what? I see cyber defense. I mean, it's like, you know, when someone's building a portfolio of investments, it's almost now that cyber defense has to be one of those pillars of the portfolio, don't you think?
I would say so, yes. It's certainly worth tracking. It's a very exciting market, and there's a lot going on.
Yeah, but it, not only exciting, it's exciting because it's absolutely necessary, isn't it? I mean, this day and age, we see on a daily occurrence almost, you know, big corporations being hacked in some way. And so you realise that it's going to be here to stay, it's going to only grow. I mean, people's lives have migrated from real to online to business. And it's almost like one of those, it's almost like a resource now. You need it to get on in life. So it's like you said then, it's never going to go away, it's only going to get bigger, isn't it?
We'd absolutely agree with you, yes. It's going to get more complicated. There are things out there that we don't know they're coming yet, but they will. So the cyber domain is just going to get larger and larger as our lives become more and more digital.
Excellent work. Philip, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Michael Dickerson, CEO, and in a bit we'll be chatting to John Beale, CFO of MyPay. Ticker there is MPAY. Michael, thanks for talking to me.
Very much welcome. Pleasure to be here.
Now, you've had some results, and we'll get to that in a bit. We'll chat through the detail of those interim results, 6 months. But before we do that, Michael, can you explain, for people not aware of MyPay, what the business is all about, please?
Yeah, so MyPay as a business is a payment services provider that has a speciality on telcos. And what we do different than sort of a regional payment provider is that we also indemnify the transaction on behalf of our clients. That means zero risk and a high push-through of transactions through our systems.
Okay. So explain that again. You indemnify it. So just explain that again, please, if you did.
Yeah. So so if you go online and wanting to purchase a top-up at a website or through a mobile app, at a telco, you would basically, process your transaction, and in some cases, this will be a fraudulent transaction. In a normal environment, the telco will then bear the loss for that fraudulent transaction. In our case, we screen and take the responsibility for that transaction, and as such, we also go in and identify should there be fraud. So it's a full outsource of online digital payments, specifically towards the telco segment.
I see. Excellent stuff. All right. Marvellous. And so let's go to the interim results for the last 6 months, or I should say 6 months to the 30th of June. Take me through some of the operations and how it's going, please, if you could, Michael.
Absolutely. So we set out 2017 with some clear targets of driving additional growth with existing clients and built the platform for long-term growth opportunities. And we have grown our annuity-based transactions of our revenue up by 12%. We have also delivered a new three-year contract extension with our largest client, which basically underpins our expectations going forward. And that's a client who also, through their own acquisition, is expecting to have a large growth in their online transactions. In fact, they are today 25 million euros, and we expect over the course having a run rate of over 2018 to 100 million euros.
I see. And where are your clients based then, Michael? Your clients there?
So we have clients predominantly in the UK, we have in Europe, Ireland, we have also clients out in Far East Asia.
Okay, and as far as your competitors are concerned, I mean, is it a very competitive field?
Well, it is a competitive field in terms of payment processors, but ultimately, there's not many competitors that offers indemnification. So we only have one major competitor, which is US-based company who offered indemnification. And in this wind that we have just secured a three-year extension, we were in a public tender where all the usual suspects, so to speak, were participants, and we won that due to our omnichannel approach and our experience within this field.
I understand. Okay. And sorry. Okay, excellent stuff. So, and looking forward, how are our operations looking? What's the outlook for the next 6 months, would you say? Obviously, it's a bit early now, but I mean, is it looking good?
Yeah, we believe it looks good. We are continuing to build a relationship both with new and existing clients, but we also have a number of already predefined deliveries that we are now rolling out. We are also and just have launched a new service trial where we are offering fraud as a service as a separate product, and that trial is ongoing presently.
Excellent stuff. Well, okay, well, let's speak to John, the CFO, John Beale, and let's talk about some of the figures, if we could, please, Michael.
Good morning.
So we've had the interims out. Take us through some of the highlights of the figures, John, and how you're doing there.
Okay, so we're pleased with the results. As you know, as Michael has outlined, really our core focus now as a business is to drive long-term growth from our transaction services revenue, which is an annuity-based revenue stream, people effectively topping up their services every month. And again, as sort of Michael has outlined, it's a growing base as consumers move onto the digital channels, onto online. So we're seeing good growth. Our revenues are 1.5 million for the first half of the year. Mm-hmm. And if you look at if you drill into that, we have two core revenue streams: the transaction services revenue, which is our top up services, and that's really what we're driving growth on. That grew 12% in the period versus H1 16. But I think most importantly for us, that is underpinned by the new contract win, which first and foremost retains our largest client, but also we expect to see material growth in 2018. So we'll drive that revenue significantly up over the future periods from a solid base. Our professional services revenues reduced slightly over the period, just really as we focus on driving those annuity-based revenue streams, and they become less important to us as a business. From a gross profits point of view, again, we've seen some really strong performance in that. In H1 16, we hit 55% gross margin. Mm-hmm. And in H1 17, we've hit 63%, so an 8% increase. And that's really driven from the efficiency of our platform, the ever-improving ability for us to manage the fraud within the platform, and also the optimization rate, so how many successful transactions we deliver. So that really gives us good flexibility moving forward. And as we drive the transaction service revenues up, the profits will flow from that. From an overheads point of view, we saw a marginal increase in overheads to 1.3 million, primarily because we've invested and continue to invest in our security services. With a GDPR coming in play in 2018, we see that as a real opportunity for the business because we are really set up for a strong solution in the data service and data protection environment. So it really does help our dialogue with our future customers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that led to adjusted operating loss of just under 200,000 when you remove any non-cash items and 100K that we spent on looking at, that we continue to do, look at ongoing merger and acquisition opportunities. So from a cash flow point of view, and just as a nod to our business model, one of the real benefits of our transaction services business model is that because we manage the cash that's flowing through, we have very little working capital requirements in our business. So we closed the period with 3.7 million of cash. Mm-hmm. We have no debt on the balance sheet. And just after the period end in July, we also recovered 300,000 in R&D tax credits in cash, which effectively offset any of the cash outflow during the period. So we effectively move into H2 17 in a strong position, with then a strong pipeline, as Michael has outlined, to go and grow that margin business for the longer term.
Yeah, well, I'm seeing, you know, more than half your market cap now seems to be in cash. Obviously, that was June 30th with no debts, a strong position. And as far as profitability concerned, before tax profitability operating level, do you have a certain time frame of when you're targeting that?
I mean, obviously, we are targeting it as soon as possible, but yeah. We're not doing that at the expense of investment. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, clearly we expect to see that over the period of 2018 as we deliver the contracts that Michael has outlined. It's within our grasp to go and deliver that now. And importantly, we have a strong margin, gross margin position to work from. And from a cost-based point of view, we don't see that we need to invest materially to expand the business and to expand the volumes. So again, this, you know, any of the gross profits we make should flow straight down to the bottom line, and with no working cap requirements either, because of our business model, it really does flow straight through into cash as we get there. So we've got really good visibility now of the coming periods.
Excellent stuff. John, it's good to chat to you. And if you throw me back to Michael now, I'm going to ask him his three reasons why someone should hit that follow button. So good work.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yes.
Okay, hello. Michael, thanks very much. Listen, there's only one thing left for me to do, ask you, and that's if someone's listening right now and like the sound of where you're headed, the direction in which you're travelling, but are not yet following you on Vox Markets, could you give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please?
Yes, I think I can. So if you, as an investor, are looking to follow online payments, digital service in general, and data security, I think this would be some of the major points which would be addressed by MyPay's business case.
Excellent. Listen, Michael, good to chat to you. Good to speak to John as well. And hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Hurricane Energy, HUR. At four, Ascent Resources, AST. At three, Canadian Overseas Petroleum, Coppel. At two, Nostra Terra Oil and Gas, NTOG. And number one most followed company, the CEO and president, it's on the podcast yesterday, Zaza, it's Frontera Resources, FRR. Okay, it's time for the top five most liked RNSs on the platform in the last 24 hours. Or this morning, I should say. At five, Prospects Oil and Gas, PXOG, that's half-year report. At four, Harvest Minerals, HMI, registration of KP Fertile as a remineralizer. Looks like it's going well there. At three, Georgian Mining Corporation, that's interim results. At two, Canadian Overseas Petroleum, Coppel, operational update. And number one, most liked RNS on the platform this morning was from Premier African Minerals, PREM. Interim results. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.